And we name ourselves quantum dynamics and computation. And this is most of our work is has something to do with solving time-dependent Schrödinger's equations, which provide snapshots of time sequence of quantum systems evolving in time under the influence of external fields or internal interactions. Yeah, we can model up to 20 electrons from first principle, basically. But we are also doing something apart from that. And that's one of the topics is what I'm going to talk about on quantum works. Okay. And this work is based on mainly PhD projects of Brandon Douglas and Kia. So they've done all the work and they are still working hard at home, and I'm here to tell the story. So why do we really worry about implementation? I'll start from possibly the random works. And that has found applications in virtually all science related and disciplines. Just a quick search in the internet, you can find many such examples where random working has played a role in solving problems of everyday phenomena. So I think that provides an expectation and quantum work being analogous of its classical counterparts and may also provide a fruitful source of quantum algorithms, quantum applications. And indeed, in the last few years, people have found a few, at least, such applications. Most of the work actually coming from here in Waterloo, and that's partly why I chose this topic. I thought it might be common ground for discussion and so on. So, I think I'll get three examples. And obviously, Andrew Charles is here in Waterloo. And this is one of the earliest applications. And so this is a glue tree, and you have binary connections from the entrance. And only in the middle, you have random connections. And afterwards, you just glue it back. So the purpose is if a worker starts from the entrance, and how quickly he can find the way out. And classically, it will be exponentially scaling in terms of the layer of trees, mainly because up to here, it's very easy to descend it backwards and it takes a long, long, long time to get to the exit. And you'll find an algorithm, a way of doing it in the quantum world based on a quantum oracle. And so it's not really true in that sense. You based on assumed black box. But based on that, he found one can do it exponentially fast. And so, which is a milestone in this area. And another very interesting application, especially in the last year or so, as people start to look at search, quantum search in on highly symmetrical graphs, and it's they prove all those papers and talked about the polynomial gain if you do the search in a quantum way in comparison with classical. And these are just two examples. You can search fairly efficiently. Fairly, that means polynomial speed up in complete graphs and other similar graphs with high degree of symmetry. And also there is really a lot of attempt to solve a very hard problem, that is this long-standing problem called graph isomorphism. And I'm sure you all know that's very important in computer science, but it also has a lot of applications in science and even engineering. And just an example, I think this is quite obvious. In chemistry or molecular biology, people often want to know if two given structures, even though they look very different and they have very different spectra, but and topologically they are the same. So they have the same kind of connections, but they are arranged geometrically differently. And any of such structures can be related to a graph and in mathematical terms. And you have certain nodes and connections, yeah, between those nodes. So here I draw two graphs which look very different, but in fact they are isomorphic. And so that means they are topologically identical. If you do a permutation of this graph, you can find exact match and between the two. So they are topologically exactly the same. And a very naive way of doing it is what I said, you try out all the permutation, and if you can find a match, which means the two graphs are isomorphic. But the scaling is terrible, scales n factorial, where n is the number of nodes in the graph. The best, I think that's possibly common knowledge, the best non-classical algorithms still scales up exponentially, as far as people know. So nobody knows whether it is a P or NP, so that's why it's a very important problem in mathematics and computer science. I just have to acknowledge many discussions with mathematicians back home. From them I learned quite a lot. One can also learn, obviously, about a graph structure by random walking. So classically, that's what people do. I mean, maybe I'll do it here in Waterloo. So I don't know where to go. I just throw a dice. Depending on the outcome, I will move accordingly. So write it in a mathematical form. You have a probability at any one time, at all those nodes. And then you, depending on how you design the coin, can be biased or not biased. You get your probability at a later time. So quantum mechanically, you do the same thing. You apply a quantum coin, and which is basically a unitary matrix, a unitary operation. You start with, instead of talking about probability, you talk about amplitude, that's a wave function. And so by the same kind of mapping, you get the wave function at a later time, and you do that many, many times. And that will reflect, first of all, the internal structure of the graph, and also depend on how you design the coin, the coin. Okay, just show you a few working along the graphs and see what we can learn from it. If you do it classically, nothing really interesting coming out because it's a diffusive process, and eventually they emerge into an equal population at all nodes. And if you introduce a slight difference in the graph, so here I change one bond into a double bond or double H, and the characteristics of the working remains more or less the same. But if we do it in a quantum world, it will be different. First of all, it's a unitary evolution, and it's time reversible. So it will have to be a kind of oscillation around some point. So it retains all the information. If you want to work backwards, you could. So that's what we get. Yeah, so if we here, I'm starting at the blue node and record the probability or amplitude at the green. And then you can see the probability oscillates and very regularly reflecting the symmetry of that graph. Introducing a slight change, actually breaks that symmetry, and the working becomes quite complex. And it's nothing like what you would have for a slightly simpler graph. And if you do a Fourier analysis, the frequency reflects the same complexity. So there's another one. Especially if the node is 2 to the power of something, it becomes quite, so classically, again, these two behave very similarly. And quantum mechanically, this one is almost like a sine wave oscillation, and introduce a slight change. You can introduce anything very slightly, yes. Okay, sure.
I can't tell, but it sort of looks as if the regular graph has an exponential approach to 1/8 and the irregular one has a much slower approach. Is that right?
I think so. That's what I recorded here. That's the case. How about the other one? I didn't really just look at the overall feature. It looks very similar. But let's see the other one. Yeah.
You can't really tell in that case.
This is a bit flatter.
Not much.
So just in terms of what these graphs mean, I mean, you have two highlighted vertices. So you start in one vertex and the probability of being in the other?
That's right. Yes. In this case, I choose to compare very similar. Yeah.
And what's the coin flip? Is it just 50-50 either way?
Yes.
Okay. So then the quantum mechanical one would be a Hadamard gate or something?
That's right. Yeah, this one.
So it's the usual.
Yes. So choose two arbitrary graph, randomly. And what I did is change this one, the connection from here to here, to remain largely the same. Because those graphs are not symmetrical. I just don't want to talk about the classic one. So they look same. They are complicated, oscillations. But the most important thing is they are quite different, and very different. And again, the spectrum reflects that the same thing. Therefore, important for natural question we ask, and many people did the same thing. Can we use such a spectrum to identify graphs, to tell us whether two graphs are isomorphic? And there are many attempts, and I think all of them achieved a certain degree of success, but failed in certain situations, except this one. That's our work. I think those papers in the paper they already said they don't work for solid regular graphs. I think that's the hardest, one of the hardest group of graphs to distinguish. A little bit about our paper. I don't think I will have time to explain the proposed algorithm, but I will be here for another 3 or so weeks. And also I have all the slides here. If anyone wants to know the details, I'll show you after this main talk, or we can discuss it over lunch and so on. But all I want to point out is that we don't claim we solved this problem. Definitely it's not proven. The best thing I can say is we tested all sorts of graphs. And for certain graphs, you can do a permutation, and so they are isomorphic. And then our algorithm says they are isomorphic. And for all those graphs, we know they are very similar, but not isomorphic. And our algorithm definitely provides that answer. So these are the type of graphs we obtained. And they all passed the test, which at least indicates something. Lead us to believe there is something there we cannot really pin down there yet is this type of graphs are really really hard to distinguish. Most packages are just couldn't do it. This was provided by mathematicians. And what they said first to me is, try this set. Those are the strongly regular graphs have a lot of constraints. If they share the same kind of parameters, they are highly similar. So in particular, this one has a lot of them, and each of those are very, very similar. So if you try the normal kind of quantum random working, the spectrum you will observe are identical, so you have to do certain tricks. And that those tricks were explained in that paper. And we are able to distinguish all pairs. So the first one is the number of nodes. So of course, they have to have the same number of nodes. And the second one is the degree. Yeah, so all nodes have the same degree. And this one means every adjacent node have the same number of neighbors. And every non-adjacent node have exactly the same number of neighbors. So here is two neighbors for every adjacent nodes and four neighbors for every non-adjacent nodes. And those graphs have diameter too. That's right, common neighbors, yes. So those two have two common neighbors and that's four. So there's a lot of constraints, so those two graphs looks very similar. And also most of those graphs have a large number of automorphisms. Yeah, so it's yeah. I'll show anyone interested in how we proposed a way to distinguish those. The focus of my talk is implementation. Yeah, and I want to say because this is the ultimate aim is to distinguish all graphs. Yeah, and so we have to find a way to be able to implement quantum working on arbitrarily complex graphs. Yeah. Yes.
It's more. There is more to it. Yeah.
Okay, how did you do it with an actual physical implementation? Was it all simulation?
Simulation of our physical thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Of course.
But it's mainly so the algorithm is just simulation.
Yes.
Yeah, based on certain assumptions, and it was inspired maybe yeah. So it's not all just coming from out of the blue. It was inspired by some studies in mathematics, especially. So the GI problem has a set which is called GI complete. That means if you solve one subgroup, you solve the whole thing. Yeah, and look at that. If you can prove your algorithm works for graphs of diameter 2, and then you solve everything. So diameter 2 means you go out and then you immediately come back. So the whole idea of the main idea of that proposed algorithm is to introduce a symmetry from one other point. So really you look at this black box from two points instead of one. So from one, many people have done it, it's just not going to work.
Okay.
Yeah, from two. I mean, why two? People would ask, why not three?
Okay, so it's complicated, but the problem is that you did a simulation of a physical thing, and now you want to talk about the physical thing.
That's right. So what I really want to talk about today is how do we do it, not just on a piece of paper, but eventually if you want to have a quantum random work, that work has to be performed in a quantum system. So that's what I want to talk about today. But as I said, anyone want to discuss the actual algorithm, and I would be more than happy to. So now this is possibly one of those, or maybe only one, where we cannot find a counter example, and we cannot prove it yet. Yeah, one of my students, very stubborn, he's still doing work on towards that goal, but it's very difficult. Okay, quantum implementation and physical implementation. So I roughly grouped and made a classification of all graphs and then suggest the ways of implementing them differently according to their properties. The first group is highly symmetrical graphs. I think that would be very useful for quantum research. Because in the quantum research, the papers are all talking about a kind of origami, assuming it can be done, and then depending on that, how many steps you work, work out the complexity. And here I want to show you we can actually implement it very efficiently, and that means exponentially fast. And those graphs include the lines, circle. Hypercubes, complete graphs, you can see they're all very symmetrical. And regular binary trees and super graphs and so on. So we found as long as it has a high degree of symmetry, which really means you can use a few parameters to describe the graph. And then you should be able to find a way to implement it efficiently. This paper just being accepted for publication in PRA. So where we look at many graphs and provide a circuit to implement such graphs. Because it's highly symmetric, we can use phase coding. That means we can use qubits to represent the nodes, and that provides really the means to do it exponentially efficiently. Okay, just a few examples. Firstly, a circle. Yeah, this is a 16 node. Again, you can see if it's a 2 to the power of something, normally it corresponds to a much simpler circuit because we are using qubits. Yeah. So here, so you have 16, and you need 4 qubits. And because it has 2 directions, so the point space is 2, so you need another qubit. And what's that black box? This is for the increment and decrement, and which is just some control knob. Okay. Yeah. So if you have your input here, and output provides the result of one quantum working around the graph, yeah, of all nodes. Then we can do it for others. I just said a little bit more complicated, but can be done. So this is just an arbitrary number. It's not 2 to the power of something. And you can see it's just a little bit of complexity here, but still, yeah, if you're going from input to output, that's a complete random working around the graph.
How do those gates scale when you expand them out into
it's linear.
Okay.
Yeah, it's almost linear. It's definitely polynomial. Yeah, so the number of gates required is it's log n. Yeah, scales
log n.
N is the number of nodes. So you need, the resources, yeah, instead.
So even when you expand those multi-control gates,
But you expand those multi-control gates, it's going to be at least linear number of 2 qubit gates. And if you have order n of them, it'll be a quadratic number, quadratic in the logarithm, right? The size of the graph.
I need to look into it, but I think we did an estimation, and it doesn't scale. As an n, it looks like still some polynomial of log n. Okay, so the 2D hypercycle, it's an interconnection of them. And you can see it's very similar. It's just not, it's 2D, so you need 2 qubits to contain the information of the coin space of x, y directions. Complete graph, and this is actually the simplest graph you can implement. And that's a complete graph. This is a modified 16 graph where we removed every second edges. And this is really simple. I'm hoping someone will just do it. Back in China, it's Jiang, he has done one of the first, if not the first, real implementation of quantum working. And he sort of looking into it to see if that can be implemented. Okay, and for all the circuits I've talked about, we used the Hartmann coin, Hartmann gate. But here you don't have to do that. The coin operation can be anything as long as it's unitary. So here is an example of the Grok's coin, and you can see it's just a little bit more messy, but it can be done. Okay, so this is actually inspired by Nick's paper. It's a very complicated toroidal lattice supergraph, and each of the nodes is further 4 nodes and interactions between all of them. I don't know why, but that's from this paper, and Brandon tries to implement it. Use a cut circuit. It's a bit messy, but this definitely is quite, the scaling is very good. Yeah, so. Going through that, so you do the working around 8x8x4, and the whole graph, one step, which can be done in this way. Last one, we found Yeah, of course, as I said, 2 to the power of something is good for qubits. If it's 3 to the power of something, naturally you think instead of use qubits, use qubits and qubits and so on. So this is just an example. So here is a complete, I think it's 27. Yeah, 2 to the power of 3 to the power of 3. So that can be done if you use qubits instead of qubits. So these are qubits. And this T is defined here. Which are just the equivalent of the qubit Hartmann. So it's just a kind of even population of all three levels. And that can be done.
Okay, yeah, we also did the glue tree, but I was going to put it down, but I couldn't find the figures. Okay, so the second class is sparse. So you have a fairly large graph. You only have sparse connections between the nodes, and those papers are actually talked about it and proved it can be at least approximately implemented very efficiently. And the last paper, which is published, which was on archive in April, just a few weeks ago, I talked about a more broad kind of graphs. But they also have to have some special properties with the graph in order to be able to use qubits, to dense coding, and then to apply gates to implement them. And lastly, I mean, there's arbitrarily complex graphs, no spatial property, and so you can't really analyze the symmetry and find a corresponding circuit. And unfortunately, I don't know how to do it. I don't know. Anyone would, I'm not sure, but what I want to say is we can't do it efficiently. We can't do it exponentially efficiently. But what we are doing here is try to find a way to improve the speed polynomially. That's what I'm going to talk about now. Mm-mm.
So,
exactly.
Because you can always use
That's right. But then it's just the units of the gates. So if you do the decomposition, you will see. But I don't know how to do it. I mean, I don't know whether. Yeah, it can be done. But just to think about it, the number of 2 qubit interaction. Because if you change something here, everything changes.
Yeah.
So we propose to use a quantum state instead of qubits, and then we want to do them as many operations in parallel as possible, so in order to provide a polynomial gate. Published 2 papers. One is talking about how do we do it using quantum dots, and another one we just submitted to PRL and using optical ledgers. I think I only have time to talk about one of them, and if I have time, I'll go back to the other one. So I'll concentrate on this one. It's just much cleaner and much nicer, and it's nice. Yeah. So optical light is created by sharing 2 laser beams with the same frequency, and therefore they form a standing wave in between. Yeah, opposite phase. So that's what you will get. And if you have a rubidium item, for example. The atom will tend to fall into the minimum because that has less energy. So if you have 1 item, it just, the wave function is very fast. If you want to be more adventurous, you can shine another laser from the other direction. You can create a 2-dimensional optical lattice. And to be even more fancy, if you shine another laser from the other direction, you get 3D. Okay. Okay, so how do we do it? I just want to remind you what we want to do here. And here, I can't use qubits, I have to use quantum states. So that's the Hilbert space we have to use. And this is an arbitrary graph, has certain self loops and so on. So for example, this node, which would have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 coin states, which will determine which way the worker will be going. So this one will have 5 and so on. So that's the Hilbert space we need to utilize to do the quantum working. We start with an initial wave function, which can be a superposition of all things or just one state, doesn't matter. And the first thing we need to do is a coin operation, which is a local. So you really basically do a rotation around. So you mix all the states. So if you start with the system in one state, after this operation, you would have some kind of distribution among all. All right. So you do that for each node. Yeah. So you do it separately. Yeah. And then you do the working. Yeah, which is translation between corresponding states. And you do it again and again. That's how. Yeah, so that's what I'm going to propose to. Okay.
So is the C are using the diffusion operator to mix things?
This is just a unitary operator.
Okay, so yeah. In the case where 3 is 2, it's the Hadamard, right? And what
do you that's do? Right. Yeah, three. So 3, yeah, there's no 3 Hadamard. I don't know. Yeah, but there are 3 BFT coin or the Grok coin or whatever, you know, as long as the 3. By 3 unitary matrix, yeah. And you can design, you can use different coins for different nodes, but yeah. So it's arbitrary. That's right. So for us, we want to implement an arbitrary and unitary operation at each of the nodes. Yeah. So you do that, so on and so forth, and that's what you will get. So first thing we did, we noticed that we can get rid of the translation operator. So that reduced the operation to half. How do we do it? Let's look at the complete graph first. Yeah. So this one is requires the maximum possible help space. So each node will have the maximum number of coin states. Yeah, so write it like a square. Yeah, so we want to first of all apply the coin operation. This is need to be done because yeah, so here the representation is this is node 1 and node 2 and so on, and each node would have n and coin states, and we want to mix them to start with.
Okay, so just to clarify, each of those blue dots, that's not a different object, that's just a state.
Yeah, just a state.
Okay, so then the coin operators are unitaries that mix the Hilbert space states, well, that act only in those subspaces.
That's
indicated, is that right?
Yes. Okay. Yes, exactly. Yes.
So, in your, to what do these states correspond in your optimal lattice? I mean, is that, no?
Yeah, I'll give you that picture in a minute. Yeah, so here is very abstract, and you can use any quantum system to do it, but how do I do it? And then I will have to assign particular states to those dots. Yeah, but I'll come back to that when I talk about the actual system. Okay. All right. So after that operation, we need to do the translation, and then you may have already noticed if I assign the KL, the translation is LK. Basically, we are the next one. We are going to mean this one goes to here, and so on. And if I do the coin operation instead of vertically but horizontally, and I don't need to do the translation, so this think these two combined will be done by doing the coin operation along the horizontal direction. And you can see, and then this translation, we can forget about it, but instead I will do it vertically, and then horizontally, and vertically, and so on. So immediately we get rid of half of the operations. So this groups into 1, 2, and as you can see, all we need to do is the coin operation. So as long as we can do those, and we can implement the quantum working in many steps. And that's what I'm going to show you how to do it. Oh, before I do that, so that's a complete graph. So if we have an arbitrary graph, which is not complete, what we need in the actual physical implementation is just block out the unwanted side. It's a waste, but it's okay.
and you don't make transitions to that site at all. That's fine. Yeah, so those are always dark state and will never be populated. For close, yes. Yeah, that's right. Yes. Yeah, for the GI problem, if you can solve close, then that's okay. So it's only close and it's not directed. Yeah, so it's undirected. Yeah. Okay. So all the nodes are connected, yeah, at least by one edge. So that's good. Okay, so this is what we need to do. And as I talked about, we need to apply the coin operation along each of those columns individually, they're separately. I'll just show you how to do it for one, and then you can do the rest in parallel. Yeah. Okay. So this operation, as I said, we don't talk about specific unitary matrix, it's arbitrary. So we can't assume there's any zeros or anything, so it will be all non-zero. And we can't do this in a physical system, it's just too many parameters to control. So what we are proposing to do is to do the decomposition first. So we can, what physicists are really good at is pairwise interaction. So we need to decompose this unitary matrix into lots of matrices, and hopefully it's still kind of polynomial in time, and do them pairwise. And we tried out several decomposition schemes, but this one comes to be very, very useful. So if you do the CS, it's called cos and sine decomposition, and you get you decompose that fairly complicated, very dense non-zero unitary matrix into many of those. And it's n, so that's n. The worst case, actually, if you have any structure, any symmetry, many of those u's will be diagonal and zero and so on. Yeah. So there, for the worst case, you would have all u to perform. And let's look at the structure of this u. It's always of this block diagonal. And internally, it has an even more pleasing feature. So each of those would have diagonal and non-zero and off diagonal, this kind of side diagonal, non-zero, and the rest is zero. So how do we do this? I'll just give you one example. This is one of the u. As you see, the rest is zero, and those are non-zero. And if you look at it closely, these four elements really can mix this one with that, nothing else. And the next four will mix these two, nothing else, and so on. Yeah. So if I can shift everything up by the same amount, this structure is really nice. And then I get overlap of these four to that, and I do the rotation, and then I move them back. And it can be done, many operations at the same time. So that's what we propose to do, and all these things, can be done at the same time because they are independent. So that's what we want to do. We move those states to be overlapped with the things they will be coupled with by the U. And then we do the rotation, and then we'll move them backwards. So that will hopefully answer your question as well. Now let's talk about physics. So we have this optical lattice, and the atoms are trapped inside. And let's look at the atomic structure. So those are the lowest energy levels of rubidium atom 87. If you don't have any external field, these states are degenerate. That means they have the same energy. But by applying a magnetic field, you lift up the degeneracy, so they become different. Okay. So what the first thing I want to show you is how do we do the rotation between these two. So after they overlap, I do a rotation and then move forward. So I want to make arbitrary rotation between A and B. Yeah, just apply one laser beam is not good enough. That's called the right cycle, because then you have to stop at exactly the time point, and then it's very hard to control. So what people do, I mean, this is definitely it's not our work, but it's being done by many people. It's called a Steerack process. And if you apply three instead of just one, you apply three laser pulse in very counterintuitive way. And so that's what we want to do. Yeah, we have a population in A and B. We want to do a mixing between those two. But I apply a pulse first. Yeah, it's called a stock pulse. And then after a little while, you apply the pump pulse, which is sigma 1 and sigma 2. And by doing that, oh, and then you have to apply them backwards. By doing that, you will be able to do arbitrary rotation. So the experimental parameters which you can change is the duration of the pulse and the timing of the pulse. So here I gave two examples. And the first one, so what I changed in my simulation is the pulse duration and the pulse timing. So you can. So you start with, you have two states, A and B, you want to do the rotation. And you have two auxiliary states, which you don't really need, but it's helping in the process. So initially, so that's blue and green. So you can see they start with zero, those two. Yeah, and you end up with zero, right? But these two states, A and B, after this, it becomes superposition of those states. That's a Hartnup gate. And you can do it any other rotation. I mean, this is, yeah, the standard form. And you change it. You can design anything you really want to achieve. So that's the rotation. Two of these states. Yeah, so, two states. Yeah. Okay, so how do you do the transportation? You want to move certain states to somewhere else, to be together, so I can do the rotation. And this work has been, this kind of work has been done in the literature, but they are not really meant to, not towards the goal of implementing quantum random work. We borrowed it, and we want to do the working. So what we want to do is. So you have this atom, its wave function spread out in space. And we want to shift some of those amplitudes into another place and do the rotation. How do we shift those two? So the atoms interact with the optical lattice through the electron spin, because the laser field is really a magnetic field. And electrons has this tiny spin, like a tiny magnet. So it interacts with the magnetic field. So it will see different field depending on the direction of the spin. However, the spin, electron spin, is not a good quantum number, because there is a nuclear spin, and which provides a hyperfine structure. So the total angular momentum is a good quantum number, where MS is not. So for those two states, which if you remember the previous slide, one is F equals 1, MF equals 1, and the other one is F equals 2, M equals 2. So those are good quantum numbers, while the MS is not. But you can do the decomposition. If you do that, that is provided by this Clebsch-Gordan coefficient. It's coming from quantum angular momentum theory. So you just do the calculation, you will find this state will have a quarter of spin pointing down, electron spin pointing down, and three quarter of the electron spin pointing up. For this state, it will only have electron spin pointing upwards. And because of that, those two states will interact with the optical field differently. And if you do the calculation, and you will get two standing waves. And then you tune the polarizer of the standing of the laser field, and it will change the position. So what you will get is, for one state, it's going this way. the other state is going the other way. All right. So the idea is, if I want to shift this block of the atomic wave function to here, but here remains stationary, I will excite this state to upper state, and that will see a different optical potential, and it will move this way and move that way. So they will overlap.
It's like a filled optical lattice where there's atoms at each site. Is that what you have? You just have one atom that's then going to move additionally?
Yeah. And yeah, so if you want, if you have one atom and do the, if you want to do the measurement, it can be anywhere according to this wave function. And if you just take lots more measurements. And what we would like people to do is to use DEC, where all atoms have the same property. And then you have lots of atoms. But you can look it as if it's just one atom.
Okay.
So I think that picture is okay, one atom is
so,
okay.
All right, so the picture that I have in mind is a single atom that's in one of these states. The response to the laser changes differently depending on which one it's in.
Yeah.
And so it can, its position then becomes entangled with its spin state by the laser.
That's right, that's right, yeah, exactly. That's
and then
right.
So then the states are the individual wells.
Yes, yes. So the states, the two states, one, is the spatial localized state.
Yeah.
And then you have internal atomic states.
Yes.
The internal atomic states are used to do the transportation. Yeah. And the discrete, the superposition, and states are used to cover the information, the probability or amplitude. Yeah. Okay. Well. Yeah. So here is what my student produced, an artistic impression, just to refresh the whole procedure. So first of all, if we want to move this bunch upwards, the nice thing is they all need to move same amount. So you can do it all at the same time. So you apply a high pulse, and you excite those to the upper state, and then they see a different potential. So you can move them. Yeah. And then you shine the laser, and you do it, you do a rotation. Yeah, so we mix the states, so the different amount of up and down, or different amount of excited and lower ground state. And then while they are still at the excited state, you move them backwards. And you do a pipe house, and you be excited, and you start it over again. Yeah, for different view, the blocks you will need to move will be different. Yeah, so you do all the views all together, and then you achieve the whole implementation. I think I'll skip this quantum dot thing. It's basically exactly the same thing, except so it will be moved by acoustic surface waves. Again, the acoustic surface wave, which is created by tiny ripple, very high frequency, and that produce acoustic waves on the surface of some kind of material, semiconductor. And then you can excite the atom into those tiny wells. The wells is in nanometer scale because the frequency is gigahertz. And so it can filter out different states. Yeah, make them move or not move. So you achieve the same kind of purpose. To conclude, the proposed scheme works for arbitrary graphs, and the scaling is polynomial because we propose a way of implement many operations in one go. That's where it comes from. And so the actual working is not required, which is nice to have immediately. And I think it can be physically implemented in many similar systems. Hope someone will carry on the experiments. In the last month or so, I have been visiting quite a few experimental groups, and interests are there. So hopefully someone will start to looking at the real actual implementation. That would be really nice. Thank you.
So is this true in your current implementation, the size of the local qubit space is proportional to the degree of the graph?
It's the number of edges double.
Number of the edges
double.
Half size, right?
That's right. So because, yeah, because.
So if I have this a complete graph, that this could be proportional to the system size, right?
Yes.
So the local space could be pretty big.
It's going to be because it's I don't see a way of getting this log n and a reduction because it's going to be the state required because if it's arbitrary, you have to code all the information and all the information are number of nodes and all the connections, so it has to be there. So it will be n squared states. Yes.
Do you think then is there some atoms you can somehow use so many levels?
Yeah, but the left you like the qubits, you get polynomial gain. It will never be an exponential gain. So you can use it's like what I said, you can use 10 levels, but that's just a polynomial gain. It's like quantum computing, instead of using qubits, you can use qubits, but you don't get another exponential gain. So it's polynomial gain again. Okay. On top of polynomial gain. So it will be polynomial. Yeah. Okay.
So is the number of atoms proportional to the size of the graph for the?
No, we don't need, as Nick was saying. Yeah, so if everything's perfect, we just need one atom, but you repeat the experiment many times. So okay. So this is the wave function spreading out. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
But if you use the BEC, which is really nice, and then you don't have to repeat the experiment so many times because each BEC has 10 to the power of 4, they all look identical. They have the same property. So if you manipulate that, but there are problems with BEC. So So possibly that's the way to go instead of doing.
But I'm wondering if you're getting like in the first part of your talk, you were drawing these circuit diagrams where the number of qubits was logarithmic in the size of the graph, and whether you're getting sort of that benefit, because it's true that you can just have one register that has a large range, but then it might there'll be problems with precision because you'd have to distinguish many states.
Yeah, but it's spatial, so it's okay. So scaling looks all right because you spread the electron out in space and improve the accuracy. You can even use every second size. In optical lighters.
So would the size of your quantum computer be proportional to the size of the graph? And maybe that's a difficult question.
It's always if you cannot do the dense coding and the space, the resource required will grow. Yeah. But I don't see any way around it. Unless if it's highly symmetrical sparse. And then you can dense coding it and use qubits, and then that's nice.
Yeah.
But if it's arbitrary graph, I don't know. Yeah.
You have the Stirrup implementation. You have the Stirrup technique. Find the polarization to shift the lattice.
Yeah.
So it means that you're actually having both the coin of the Stirrup technique is doing the coin operation job, and then your polarization is actually doing the translation. So I sort of missed out that getting rid of translation in that physical scheme you showed.
Yeah. So you see here. I'll go back to that slide. Yeah. Here. So you move these things upwards and you apply the vertical and coin operation. The next step, you move things this way, and you apply the coin operation in the horizontal way. And you do this way, and this way, and this way, so you don't need to do the walking. You don't need to do the translation.
The walking would be moving depending on what the coin is, and this doesn't depend on what the coin is. It just moves.
It's moving independent of the coin.
Yeah.
But then the polarization actually.
But I think it's right. So first of all, you are doing it this way. Yeah. So this is C1, C2, C3, C4, and so on. Yeah. And then you need to do it the other way. I think the representation is just that way. And you do it.
So perhaps, I don't know if you know these numbers offhand or the formulas offhand, but could you describe, like, if you had an arbitrary graph and someone said, oh, I want to do this on a quantum computer using qubits, how well could they do? And then you say, all right, that's nice. Well, I want to do it using my scheme. How well can I do? Yeah. In terms of both the resources and the number of steps.
I think we did an estimation, which was in this paper. And so if we do it, use a circuit.
Because the circuit representation will always have fewer resources, but the number of steps might be quite large.
Yes. So the scaling, it's a kind of, so the upper bound for this scheme.
You can write it word.
So the upper bound in this scheme scales, kind of like this. Yeah. And otherwise, it will be, don't ask me how I get this, but that's in this paper. So if you do it, use dense coding. And that's the number of operations you have to do.
So the top one is the number of?
The top one is here, your state. So it's a trade-off. You use a lot of more resource, but the number of operations is almost linear. And if you use a circuit to remember all those states, qubits, and then the operation will have to be as such.
And that n is the number of nodes?
Yeah.
OK, so the number of operations in this case scales linearly with the number of nodes. But in the qubit case, it would scale.
Yeah. So it's polynomial game.
Okay. But in that case, okay, so you're sacrificing the exponential speed up in, or exponential compression in space. Mm. All right, so the exponential compression in space is associated with the n to the fourth number of gates, is that right?
I think this is the upper bound, this is the lower bound. So that's the best the quantum circuit can do. That's the worst. Yeah.
Okay.
That's why it's written here. Yeah. But still, you can see this can be done. This is a lower bound, so that's the optimum. Go on.
Other questions? All right. Well, perhaps we'll thank Jingbo again. She'll be here until the 30th.
Thank you.